Everybody ready? The show on the road!
Doesn't even show up on the GPS. It's unworthy of global positioning.
That's the whole point. Get off the grid, right?
Hello? I'm thinking this thing doesn't take credit cards.
Sign says closed.
We're looking for, what's it called?
Tillerman Road.
Not to get you there. Getting back. That's your concern.
Hello, and welcome to Pushing the Hot Button. This is the inaugural episode of Pushing the Hot Button. Do you feel honored to be on this podcast?
Inaugurally.
It's something like that. The first annual.
Hello, annual. We're only doing these once a year.
Yes.
So, enjoy it while you can.
So, this is a new podcast. It's not, like, regular. It's not going to be weekly. It's just going to be kind of whenever the fuck we feel like doing one.
Yeah.
We're just going to talk about a hot topic. We're going to push the hot button.
I just pushed it. Wait, I have a hot button. It's pretty hot. It's pretty zany.
That is a hot button.
That is one hot button.
It's a little error report crossover there.
Yeah.
Continuity.
The hottest of buttons. All right, so we are going to be talking about Cabin in the Woods on this episode.
We are.
To which we both saw. Yes, very, very spoiler heavy. If you have not seen Cabin in the Woods, do not listen any further. Go see that movie.
Yeah, don't listen to us talk about it, because, yeah, you should see that movie not knowing anything about it. I did know more about it than I wanted to going in. And
how much did you know about it going in? All right, spoiler start now, guys.
I read that asshole Rex Reed's review who spoils a thing.
Oh.
One of the uncredited cameos.
Whose cameo?
The cameo at the end of the movie.
Okay. Should we just go ahead and say, since, like, this is spoiler territory?
Yeah, sure. Okay, so this is the jumping off point, people. Stop listening to this podcast if you have not seen The Cabin in the Woods, because you should.
Once again, warning you, do not listen further.
Warning.
Warning, 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 warning. There you go.
Spoilers. So Sigourney Weaver is in The Cabin in the Woods.
Yes, she is. I think I was the only one that laughed when she showed up. I don't know why I laughed.
I was in a really terrible theater to see this movie. No one was laughing. They're really seeming to enjoy themselves.
Really? I had a lady who had a baby in the theater. A baby, not like a...
That's not cool.
Like a two-month-old baby.
That's really not cool.
No. She stepped
especially
out three times.
There's like some messed up shit in that movie.
Yeah, and there were actually times where it was right whenever Dana was walking into the cabin for the first time, and the baby started crying, and I actually thought it was part of the movie. And then I was like, no, that lady's getting up. Damn.
So that sort of ruined your experience.
That would have been creepy, though, right?
If there was a baby crying when Dana walks up to the cabin?
Yeah.
I guess.
It was when she stepped in for the first time.
I would have been happier if one of the monsters in the boxes was just like a mechanism that was a baby crying mechanism. Just like speaker phones or something.
Yeah. So I was less surprised by Sigourney Weaver than I was whenever the guy who plays Andrew in Buffy showed up.
Oh yeah, no. For like Whedon fans, that's like a really crazy cameo.
Yeah, and
I'm sure most people will go to Sigourney Weaver on that, but that was the pleasant surprise for me.
Yeah. And he plays pretty much Andrew, but, you know, an intern.
Right, so this just continues your theory that the cabin in the woods is in the Buffyverse.
Okay, I have a slight theory that everything that Whedon writes
I know exactly what you're talking. I've thought about it, too.
It can kind of fit in the same universe, you know? Like, say that, you know, this place that the this, you know, station is sitting on top of, what if that was like a Hellmouth or something?
Mm-hmm. And, okay, I'm gonna blow your mind.
Okay.
Okay. So here's the timeline. The first movie, the first like thing in the Buffyverse is Cabin in the Woods, right? And when the giant hand comes up and smashes everything,
mm-hmm.
it like resets everything like right after the Big Bang.
Okay.
So hear me out, and then everything just like evolves the same way as it did, and then we pick up with Buffy like 3 million years later.
See, I want to think of it. I want to think of it as just like one of those things that, you know, a branch of Wolfram and Hart just is doing to appease the what do they call them? The senior partners. And
right.
that giant hand is just something that they end up having to contain. Like, what if that was, like, season 9 of Angel?
Yeah, no, I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
That would be cool. But let's give a proper summation of what this movie's about.
Okay, so basically everything goes batshit crazy when these five kids are pretty much kind of forced, like, through... It seems to be random happenstance that they all just want to go out into the woods and spend a weekend together, but they were all kind of pushed into this scenario by this corporation.
Some of them were, like, directly drugged. Like,
yeah.
I think, don't they say that,
the blonde girl...
What's her name? The blonde, like, the hair dye?
Yeah, the hair dye was to drug her. They tried to drug, what's his name? I'm pulling up the IMDb page so we don't keep doing what's his name or what's this name.
Yeah.
But they drugged his weed,
and yeah,
but it didn't.
Runs.
But it didn't work because, you know, he got different weed.
Yeah,
that was Marty, by the way.
Marty.
Marty's weed and Jules's hair.
Jules. That's Jules. Okay.
Yeah, and then they did something to Kurt, played by Chris Hemsworth, that made him turn into kind of a jock-like character, which I thought was really clever.
Yeah, and it's interesting because they don't give you a whole lot of him not being like that in that movie.
Yeah, it was basically
like they
the
kind
first
of
scene.
Play around with it in the first scene.
Where did you get
like,
these?
Oh, he's recommending
Where did you
these
get these
books? Sociology
I learned it from
books
you.
And, like.
I loved that. I love that
and
line.
And then the point where it turns, I think, is when they stop at the gas station and he comes out of the RV with a football for some reason.
Yeah. They're just like little things. Like, you know, the opening scene, it's really clever because it gets you to realize, hey, we're going to follow this girl through the entirety of the movie, and she doesn't have any pants on, which was great.
You were a fan?
I was.
It sounds like you were a fan of this.
Kristen
I don't think she's been in much.
She has not. She, according to IMDb, was on a soap opera for a few years, and then hasn't really done much else.
I see.
But yeah, she's just friggin' adorable.
She's pretty adorable.
Like
it's true.
Like
throughout that entire movie.
Yeah. Even covered in buckets and buckets of blood, she's still really cute.
Yep. I agree.
But okay,
so we haven't really actually given a summary, we sort of just spun off there.
Yeah.
So five they're probably college students.
Five college students and friends go for a break at a remote cabin in the woods where they, you know, get more than what they bargain for, and they have to discover the secret behind, you know, the cabin and the crazy things that happen there.
Sure. So there's also, the movie opens with Richard Jenkins and Bradley Whitford. And do they have... names?
Sitterson and Hadley. Bradley Whitford was Hadley.
I don't think...
They did
I don't
they
ever
did say,
remember...
I remember Amy Acker saying Hadley once.
Oh, okay.
But it was right before he was about to get eaten by the mermaid.
Oh my god. That's one of mine. And just like there's this weird, like, kind of... like, awe-inspiring music that's playing.
Yeah.
And the merman just slithers out of the rubble.
You gotta be fucking kidding me.
Okay, we're getting ahead of ourselves. Yes. The movie opens with them. They're talking about, I think, baby-proofing a house.
Which I thought was the best way to start that movie.
Yeah, no, it was great. And, you know, everything just seems normal. And then Amy Acker, who's totally in this movie for a little bit, she runs up and says, Stockholm just went south. Mm-hmm. And you're like, huh.
Yeah.
That's a weird thing for her to say to these people. What's going on here?
And they don't really explain, like, what their job is until later on in the movie.
That's true. I think one of my favorite things in the movie, actually, is that whole sequence of kind of tracking shots that ends with just, like, the crazy, you know, the Cabin in the Woods title plastering up there.
Yeah. Would you consider that, and I'm pretty sure it was, would you consider, like, the stuff in the, in that, you know, area to be second unit? Because Joss Whedon did direct second unit on this movie.
Yeah, I mean, it's always hard to tell. I mean, if someone's good at splicing together two units,
mm-hmm.
it's not easy to figure out which one is actually second unit. I read an interview with Drew Goddard today that actually said they just, when they were writing the script, they locked themselves in a hotel room for like 3 days. And they were just giving each other scenes because they had outlined it so thoroughly that they just had to write it.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're like, here, you take this scene, and they tried to divide it evenly between what's under the cabin and what's happening in the cabin. And
right.
It's all, it all sounded very interesting. But that was a very signature Joss Whedon-y kind of walk and talk.
Yes. And actually, the second line that Hadley says has a thingy in it.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a thingy.
Yeah. But, like, that's one of the things I love about this movie, is I feel like the tone and the way it plays with the genre is so perfectly encapsulated in that first scene,
mm-hmm.
and how that first scene ends with that, like,
with the title
and then the sudden blasting rock music.
Yes.
And it just works instantly.
Yes. You automatically know this is not a movie that is going to be inherently scary. It is going to be a meta commentary of everything and anything horror related.
Yes. And even I'd argue to sort of filmmaking as a whole, I think this is a commentary on, but we'll get to that a little bit later.
Okay.
Jenkins and Whitford work for this organization. But I think it's implied as sort of government-funded.
Where'd you come up with those names? Jenkins and Whitford?
That's their...
The actors' names. Okay.
Yeah, because there's no fucking way I'm going to remember their actual last names, so I'm just going to call them by their real names.
Yeah, that's fine.
They work for this shady organization that essentially makes horror movies happen. Like, they find five people and they make them fit these archetypes. They drug them or influence them to make them
mm-hmm.
fit into the five archetypes, and then send them to this cabin in the woods. At which point they lure them into this cellar that just has, like, all of this crazy shit in it, and there's like a different story almost planned for each one.
Mm-hmm. A different creature that can come out from each object. And you know, it's crazy stuff. Like, there's a conch shell that has the merman scenario.
Thought
thing,
it would be cooler with a merman.
Yeah. The thing that was like the box from Hellraiser, but only in, like, sphere form, had mm-hmm. like a saw dude in it, which was great. I fucking loved that. That reveal. That was perfect. And, like, all these different things. But it was Dana who picks up the diary and starts reading from it, and that's whenever they're like, alright, this is the scenario we're gonna go with. And what I loved was that scenario.
Yeah, and she reads out this Latin, like, mm-hmm. verse. And then the zombie redneck torture family pops up.
What I love is that scenario is kind of making fun of Evil Dead.
Yes. This movie makes fun of a lot of other movies pretty directly.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't call it necessarily, like, mean.
Right.
It's all sort of very lighthearted.
Yes.
But
it's just poking fun at the genre as a whole.
Yeah.
But what I loved was that this organization kind of like has a running bet going on which scenario is going to get chosen. And so everybody comes down into this room that looks like an underground bunker version of the Truman Show moon set.
Yes. And they've got, like, all these crazy, like, Doctor Strangelove levers and shit that they're just pulling as, like, well, gotta release the pheromone gas now so these two people fuck in the forest and we can kill them. Like, it's just
great. And so they have a bet on how they're going to die. That's fantastic. And what I loved was, like, the beginning scene, like, the first time that they talked about the bet, like, placing money on it. You don't know what they're actually betting on, but whenever you figure out what they're betting on, like, what scenario of horror movie they're going to make. That is just mind-blowingly perfect.
And that scene is also laced with a lot of awesome dialogue as it just sort of moves around the room.
Yes.
Where, like, Bradley Whitford's character, like, I think the guy who plays Andrew on Buffy, he wants to go in for the zombie redneck torture family, but maintenance already did it.
Yeah,
I don't know.
And he's
like, ah, again?
You're gonna have to split this.
Bradley Whitford says if they were creative, they wouldn't be in maintenance.
Yeah.
And, like, yes. And then sure enough they win because they pick the zombie redneck torture family.
Yep. And then whenever it comes around that they pick the zombie redneck torture family, the one girl's like, hey, I had zombie too. And he's like, no, but, you know, zombie redneck torture family is way different than zombie. They're two totally different camps here.
Yeah, yeah. Did you get a chance to, like, look at all of the monsters on the whiteboard?
Yeah, I was trying to look at some of them, but I couldn't make out a lot of them.
Yeah, there's another Evil Dead reference on there. There's one of the monsters is angry, molesting tree.
Oh, great.
There's also witches and then sexy witches right below it.
Oh, it's just fucking perfect. I cannot wait to get this on Blu-ray and then just, you know, freeze frame on all different kinds of stuff on this movie.
Okay, and can you imagine the commentary when that comes out on DVD?
Yes, I cannot wait for some Joss Whedon, Drew Goddard commentary.
That would be great. But it's interesting because I don't laugh out loud easily unless there are other people around me who are also laughing out loud and enjoying themselves. And as such, I did not laugh much when I was watching it, because I was in a shitty audience.
Oh, I was in a shitty audience too, but I was laughing anyway. Like, I didn't even care.
Right. Yeah, but I walked out and I was like, that was weird. I really liked it, but I just didn't laugh very much. And then I just started thinking about all the shit in that movie and about, like, the scene with the merman where it's just this sorrowful music and Bradley Whitford finally gets to see the merman.
Oh, you gotta be fucking kidding.
Because he wanted to see the merman the whole movie.
And then the merman eats him. Oh, so great. And I loved, okay, now we're getting way off topic again. Let's start back. Let's go to the deaths. Let's go to the deaths of the teenagers. Let's start with death number one after the really hot makeout scene between a wolf head and Jules.
Yeah, that was kind of weird.
That was weird. And
was
and
that just
I
like
know.
The pheromone gas?
No.
Or was she just getting into it?
She was just getting into it. And what I loved was everyone, you could feel the tension in the theater. Everyone was like, all right, is that wolf going to bite her tongue off? Like,
oh, yeah.
Ooh, is it going to happen? No.
She was like very deliberately like sticking her tongue in between the teeth of the wolf. And you're like, ah. Oh.
And you're like, oh, it's going to happen. It's going to be great. It's going to be great. Where is it? And nope. Not happening. Just making out with a wolf head. for no reason.
Yeah, but then she goes into the forest with Chris Hemsworth to do the business, horror movie business.
Do the naughty. And he's all like, nah, you know what? I don't want to. Or no, that was her, right?
Yes, that was her.
And then all of a sudden, okay, release the pheromone gas. And then like, let's fuck. It was great.
Yeah, no. Instantaneously.
Yeah.
And so,
and then they raise the lights, and it's like, hey, here's a perfect spot to get it on.
And then the zombie redneck torture family comes out and stabs her in the hand. And then
I loved that part because
like just
you knew it was coming.
This is making me burst into laughter because it was just crafted so well.
Yeah, it's genius. There was that really, really slow pan to the hand, and you knew something was going to happen. When's it going to happen? When's it going to happen? Is it happening now? No. And it takes like 5 seconds too long to happen, and then the stab.
Like, the music spikes, and then there's like 3 seconds after it spikes, and then...
Yes.
And then... her hand is stabbed.
Yes, and so...
And then she's decapitated with a saw.
Yeah.
And
Chris and Hemsworth then, gets away. They don't explain how, but he does.
I'm pretty sure... Isn't that the first time he gets the bear trap in the back?
Yeah, that is the first time.
That happens during that scene?
Yeah.
Because one of the zombie rednecks has like a bear trap on a chain... That
and
it throws
everywhere.
At people and pulls people towards them. It's pretty good.
And so that was and here was another moment where you were thinking it was going to be one scare and it turned out to be totally different. Marty walks outside of the cabin into the woods, and I think he's, you know, just breathing in the air or taking a piss or something. And you can see in the background on the right side, the little girl zombie just like shuffling in and out of the light.
Right.
And you're like, okay, he's gonna get stabbed in the back or something. She's gonna come up on him, and he turns around and looks back, but she's in the shadow at that point. And then she shuffles forward again, and then I had to chuckle because, you know, that was just a comical moment. And without even expecting it, Chris Hemsworth slams into him from the front, and that was the jump scare.
Yes. It's, like, just a lot of really good bait-and-switch stuff like that for the jump scares, even though it's not a very scary movie conventionally.
Right. Yeah.
I think it's really good. That leads into one of perhaps my favorite gag in the whole movie is the live feed to the Kyoto branch in Japan.
Oh.
Where there's, like, the crazy Japanese schoolgirl ghost.
Yes.
And then they secure the soul of the ghost into a frog. And it pans out, and Richard Jenkins is standing at the monitor shouting, fuck you, over and over again to, like, 9-year-old Japanese school children.
I wish
I could have watched that movie with a better audience.
Yes.
Because it would have just been one sustained laugh.
Yes.
It would never have stopped.
That leads into who dies after that. Well, there was the Marty fake death.
Where
he thought he died, but he really didn't.
Yeah, he comes back.
Yeah.
During the time he is off screen in that movie, he disembowels one of the zombies with a trowel. Which I believe is a Night of the Living Dead nod. Because the zombie kid in Night of the Living Dead... like, stabs her mother to death with a trowel.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I'm reading too much into it, but...
Maybe. Certainly. I don't know. And so then, after that, we go... They're escaping in the RV. And they're about to get through the tunnel in the cave thing. And they're like, oh shit, the cave didn't collapse.
Yeah, so then suddenly it becomes like you as the viewer are weirdly just as much invested in
keeping
Richard Jenkins making it over to stop the real heroes from leaving as you are in the real heroes leaving.
Exactly. You like it, for some reason, yeah. You want them to die. And I think that's also, you know, a piece of commentary. Like, you go to a horror sort of movie to watch people
the
die.
Movie.
Yeah. And
it's like the you know, right before the fucking starts to happen in the forest, the group of people standing around waiting for Jules to take her top off, and then she doesn't, and everybody's like, "Ah," and just walks away.
Yeah.
Which is like, yeah, no, that's totally horror movie audiences. That's good job.
I can't believe we missed this part, but when Chris Hemsworth comes back into the cabin to warn them about the zombies, they're like, okay, we should all, you know, stick together, stay in one room and close and barricade everything. And they're like, oh, fuck, what? No, I think it was Hadley, who was that again?
That's Richard, Bradley Whitford.
He's like, oh, fuck, I can't believe this is happening. And Richard Jenkins is like, hold on, hold the phone. And he just flips a switch. Some pheromone gas hits Chris Hemsworth. And he's like, you know what? We should split up. And everyone's like, yeah, that's a good idea.
And then it's perfectly timed. Because then Marty's like, really? And just immediately after that, like halfway through, he says, really, like a zombie breaks through.
Mm.
Like, it is just perfectly timed.
Yes. And then they split up, and
one of my definite favorite, because I really like characters in sort of genre movies that are sort of aware they're in a genre movie and are just baffled at the actions of everyone else.
Mm-hmm.
So I really liked Marty.
Mm-hmm.
Because he was just sort of there to be like, what the fuck are you guys doing? Why are you in this basement? And don't read the Latin in the... you know.
Yeah, I'm going to go read a book with pictures in it.
Yeah. And then that leads into one of the best lines in that fucking movie, which is like, he's reading Little Nemo in Slumberland. And he says, like, ah, Nemo, you better wake up. Things are really topsy-turvy.
And that also leads into
the whole...
one of my favorite lines.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, I'm on a reality TV show. My mom's going to think...
I'm such a burnout. Yeah. Like, that's what would occur to him. I mean, I think in that same string of scenes is where the voice whispers, like, I'm going to go out for a walk.
Mm-hmm.
And then Marty stands up and is like, I don't care. I am a free individual. And he gives this whole speech, and then without missing a beat, he says, and I'm going to go out for a walk.
Yes. Yes.
And I was just like, yes. Yes.
It's perfect. And so, okay, moving back to the cave, they finally crash in the cave, and Chris Hemsworth is like, all right, I'm going to use this motorcycle to jump across. I had this moment where I was like, dude, that's totally going to work. He's going to get across. And then I was like, wait a second.
We saw that bird earlier.
Yeah.
Who the totally bird crashed into the wall.
Yeah. All right, let's see this happen. And it was another one of those moments where I was the only one in the theater laughing. Because I guess
then,
no one remembered that.
Yeah, so like he's on his motorcycle. He's like, you know, doesn't matter what happens. I'll limp to safety if I need to, but I'm coming back.
Yeah.
And then he
with a whole
skyrockets
lot
off the cliff, and he just slams into the wall.
And it was brutal.
Yes, and then they watch him, and his as he's falling, his dead body keeps, like, bouncing against the wall, so it sort of lights up as he goes further into the pit.
And what I love is that it didn't cut away, like, three hits, bounce, 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 and then it cuts to their reaction, and then bounce, 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 bounce.
Yes. Yes.
Oh,
so
great.
Then, at this point, there's only two of them alive, so we think. There's Dana.
Dana.
Yeah, the virgin who isn't really a virgin.
We work with what we can get.
Yeah.
Because apparently she had sex with her professor. Was that it? Like...
Yeah, that was the idea.
So she had only had sex with one dude?
Yeah.
And so that was their... Okay.
And so that was like, well, that's practically a virgin. So we'll just go with this. But then she and the other guy, who I really can't remember the name of.
Holden, played by Jesse Williams.
Yes, Holden, who's kind of like the smart guy who is the love interest, sort of, for Dana. He gets stabbed through the neck.
Hey, he had a husband's bulge, so. Just another one of those perfect deadpan lines from Marty as he's walking out to go take his walk. He just points down, and you only see his, like, you only see his crotch area as he's walking past the couch, and you see them, like, it, like, you know, broken from an embrace, and he walks by with his crotch just, like, right there, and he's like, he's got a husband's bulge, and just perfect reactions from both of them.
Definitely. But,
great.
I also especially liked their reactions to Jules, like, doing her sexy dance in front of the fireplace. Which was just like, what's happening?
What is going on?
Why is she doing this?
That was her hair pheromone thing.
Yeah, but Holden gets killed. He's stabbed through the neck while he's driving.
Ooh!
And they do not shy away from showing...
No, they do not.
Getting stabbed through the neck.
No.
Don't shy away from much in this movie.
No.
And, an awful lot of death.
So we'll get to it in just a second, but there is a part that there was a certain part of this movie where I was like, all right, so now Joss is just in full-on Buffy the Vampire mode. Like, he is just writing an episode of Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's keep going. So then, like, the van the RV crashes into the lake, and she swims up to the deck, and then she gets the bear trap in the back.
Yeah, so she's, everybody at the compound is partying.
Yeah, because she's the last one there. She only has to suffer, she doesn't have to die.
Yeah, because she's the virgin, almost. Right. And,
almost.
And then they get a call on the red phone. And turns out Marty. Wait,
but there was a line that was like, "Hey, we got a call from, or we had something come down from upstairs."
Yeah.
Now, but they also talked about downstairs. Now, is this like kind of like a heaven hell thing going on, or what do you consider the upstairs part to be? Because that was the only time they ever mentioned it.
I guess I was assuming that it was a situation where like the beast. Like, shit, the hand was downstairs, and then Sigourney Weaver was upstairs.
Okay.
I guess that's the way I thought of it.
I can get behind that, yeah.
But, so they get a call from upstairs.
On the red phone. And it turns out
Marty's alive, so Marty pops out his retractable bong that turns into a coffee mug.
We're missing over one of the best parts of the movie was whenever they were partying, everyone had these like little moments. It's like this dorky guy, he is kind of talking to this girl, but she's not really paying attention. He's like, "Hey, so I hear you like the opera. Well, I've got two tickets to your favorite."
And it's like behind them, the giant screen with Dana getting like strangled.
Yes.
And
through this entire scene, they are partying like crazy, and she's just getting brutally beaten to death.
Also, when Bradley Whitford is like, "You know, I almost feel sorry for this girl," and and he starts going on his thing, and they just like sees tequila's coming into the room. It's like, "Oh my god, tequila!"
Great.
So yeah, Marty.
Wait, there was a line right before the party, whenever the security guard, he was like, "So you're celebrating?" And Amy Acker goes, "No, they're celebrating, I'm drinking."
That's a great line.
Yeah.
That's just an awesome line. But, so yeah, they get away, the two of them, and they go into this hatch where Marty seems to have figured something out, and it turns out they found, like, what seems to be some sort of maintenance elevator.
Right.
That will lead to the downstairs of the cabin, to where Jenkins and Whitford are.
Yes.
And so they get in, and it becomes increasingly clear that it's not really just a maintenance elevator.
Yeah, the zombie hand falls down with him. That's a big key part right there. just a total joke thing, you know, stupid zombie hand, and he just kicks it. But that comes back later in such a big way.
And then when it comes back, it's like, nice work, zombie hand.
Yeah. But yeah, so the elevator goes down, but then all of a sudden starts going sideways, and you're like, whoa, elevators don't do that. And then you realize...
Not normally, at least.
And then you realize, whoa, this is something else. And that's whenever they meet up with all the other different creatures that tie into the devices in the basement of the cabin.
Yes, and
there was like a ghost.
All sorts of stuff.
Yeah, crazy stuff. And then it pans out and there was even more stuff. And I have to admit, I wasn't really paying attention to what was in there because I was too busy trying to find the merman.
Because the merman is so hyped up.
Yes.
Because Whitford is just like, he bets on the merman.
Yep.
He wants to see the merman. His line that I hope goes down in history is, I think it would have been cooler with the merman.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and then music plays.
Yep.
As he's incapacitated and out comes the merman.
You gotta be fucking kidding me. Oh, okay. So they're in the elevator, and then everyone's scrambling in the war room. Everyone is scrambling to try and find where they are, and then
yes,
and then they take them, and then they try and like push them into the elevator shaft to where, you know, like it turns.
It'll open up into
And that's whenever the security guard is like, "Fucking move aside! You get out of the elevator and let him die." And that's, and then, you know,
because
zombie
they need
hand.
To, just for people who don't know, they need to kill Marty because he's the fool. And if he doesn't die before the virgin, then the whole thing is
right.
done. So.
And so then this is when I think Joss Whedon was just like, fuck it, Buffy time.
Yes. And it's arguably one of the, probably one of the best choreographed sequences in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
But when... So the zombie hand essentially messes up this guy, which is good for them. And so they grab a knife, and I think Marty takes a gun. And then suddenly, like, security guards are funneling in with assault rifles.
Yes.
And they're like, oh, shit. And so they run into this control room, and then they duck down, and they're like, what are we going to do? And then Dana sees this big, red, shiny button. And
you
she's like, I wonder what this big, red, shiny button is.
And it says Purge on it.
Yeah. And you're thinking, huh, that's interesting. And then she hits the big red shiny button, and every monster in the place funnels out of the elevators and just wrecks everybody in there.
It's like they get torn to pieces, and there's blood all over the walls, and then another group comes in, and then another group comes in, and then the elevators ding again, and more things come out, and more blood!
Yeah, it's really weird and, like, rhythmic how... Whenever one wave of people has just been decimated by these monsters, like, the camera cuts to the light above the elevator, and it dings, and more monsters shoot out of the open elevator doors.
Yes. And let's see. Fantastic. Okay, so let's start wrapping up. Okay, so then, blah, 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 they go down into the shaft, and that's whenever the merman thing happens and chaos.
We can't gloss over the merman thing.
Okay.
We really need.
So explosion, because the war room has been breached and all these monsters are coming in, but then the security guard pulls a grenade and explodes all of them. There's dust and rubble and everything, and it's just, you know, pretty much pitch black. And at this moment, there's this melody coming up, and it's like a heroic melody. You think that Dana and Marty are going to march through that door.
Yes.
But no.
It's
the fucking
merman.
It's the merman.
And you can see the look on Bradley Whitford's face, because he's not going anywhere. Mm-hmm. He's just going to lay there, and whatever's coming through that fog is going to mess him up.
Yep.
And he's wondering, what's it going to be? And that turns out to be the merman. And he's like, are you fucking kidding me? And then the merman kills him.
And then just such a very unsympathetic death for Amy Acker. She just gets octopus tentacle thrown down onto her and lifted up, and that's the end of her.
I appreciated that. I was also angry because I don't like seeing Amy Acker die in things.
Yeah.
Angel was
devastating
too traumatizing
enough. Yep.
To have that happen.
Doesn't her character in Much Ado About Nothing end up dead?
I don't think so.
Let's hope not.
Well, no, you're right. At the end of most Shakespearean comedies, everyone dies.
Yep.
Essentially it all ends with Marty and Dana.
They go down into like the ritual sacrifice room.
Yeah,
whenever I saw those sacrifice panels, that's when I was like, this kinda seems hell mouthy.
Uh-huh.
And that's
no,
whenever
I can see that.
That's whenever my thing kinda, you know.
Right.
My whole Cabin in the Woods is definitely part of the Buffy universe.
Definitely. So, they go down, and there are these five panels, and three of them are filled to the brim with blood.
Yes.
Like, their outline is all blood. And throughout the movie, you see Bradley Whitford pulling down on this lever, mm-hmm. and blood emptying into a thing.
The only one that's left is the Virgin.
Right. And so...
That's when Sigourney Weaver pops up.
Yeah, that's when Sigourney Weaver pops up. And it's like, okay, so here's the deal.
Mm-hmm. Lays it all out there. It's an exposition scene in the most badass way possible.
Exactly. Like, it's kind of...
It's kind of like when the elusive man shows up at the end of Mass Effect 3.
It's similar. I think it's almost less kind of mind-boggling than that in the information they're giving to you. Because... They don't explain a lot of, like, semantics that don't need to be explained.
Right. They're just
like, they say, there are the old gods, and they're the old gods, and that's all you need to know.
Yes.
And so Sigourney Weaver tells them, there are the old gods, this organization is around, because the old gods need the blood of these five archetypes.
Yes. And so that they won't ravage Earth.
Yeah. So they're doing this, essentially, to save humanity.
Right.
And then... I was sort of mixed when I left the theater, and then I realized, oh my god, that's like the most Joss Whedon-y ending to anything ever. So, essentially, what Sigourney Weaver says is that, you know, if you two die, then the rest of the world will live.
Mm-hmm.
If you two don't die, then everybody dies.
Right.
And at the end, everybody dies.
No, what I loved was, so you can either die for saving humanity, or you can just die. And he's like, oh, you know, those two choices are so appealing.
Yeah.
And that's whenever she pulls the gun on him. Dana pulls the gun on him.
Yes, Dana pulls the gun and is about to shoot him, because the Virgin can live.
Mm-hmm.
So if she shoots Marty, then she can live and the rest of the world can live. But
yes.
Then a monster drops down.
This is one of my favorite parts. And she says, I'm sorry, Marty. And he goes, I'm sorry too, Dana. And then the werewolf just fucking starts tearing up her body.
Yes.
You're like, no, Dana, no! And then Sigourney Weaver and Marty are just, like, rolling on the ground, and then the little girl zombie is slowly creeping up.
The little girl rams an axe into Sigourney Weaver's head.
Yes.
And both of them fall into the pit with the old gods.
Which was great. And so Marty shoots the werewolf with the gun. Dana's still alive. And then they just sit down and
they have a
they're
joint.
Just waiting
they
for
share
the,
a joint.
They're waiting for the end to come. He's like, I'm sorry I pulled a gun on you. I'm sorry I let a werewolf ravage your body.
And then it's like, I don't think Kurt even has a cousin. And it's just this perfect.
I wish I could
like,
have seen the gods.
Yeah, it's,
I know
this,
what you mean.
It's this perfect, weird, kind of bittersweet ending where it seems like they both decide that a world where this sort of thing is happening is not something we should preserve.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're like, well, fuck it.
Yeah.
Let's just let this. And then at the end of the movie, this giant-ass hand breaks, that just shoots out from under the cabin and swipes toward the camera, and it ends.
So great. So great.
So great. And I think that's one of the really interesting... I read somewhere someone was making a case that Marty in this is like the opposite in a lot of ways of his character on Dollhouse.
Mm-hmm.
Because in Dollhouse, he's like the puppeteer, mm-hmm, who then kills himself to save everyone.
Yeah.
And then in this, he's the one who's being messed around
now
with.
Now, wait a second, because he didn't kill himself in Dollhouse.
And he doesn't kill himself and everyone dies.
He doesn't kill himself in Dollhouse.
No, he does. No. He sacrifices himself.
No. Summer Glau pulls a gun on him and shoots him in the head.
That's not what happens.
Yes, it does.
You're entirely misremembering Dollhouse.
Then
Summer
who?
Glau is the one that gets shot.
Oh, Summer Glau. Yeah, you're right. By Amy Acker.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, shitty show anyway.
That's not true. That's not
no,
a shitty
okay,
show.
That episode was really good.
Much of the second season is very good.
I guess, whatever. Back to Cabin in the Woods.
Yeah. So let's really dive into sort of the meat of Cabin in the Woods here.
Sure. Yeah,
we've had our fun talking about how funny this movie is.
Yes. Let's talk about the meat and potatoes. Let's get down and dirty. Let's talk about how amazing Joss Whedon is.
So Joss Whedon,
he's pretty amazing.
I don't know if you know who he is. Are you familiar with Joss Whedon, Quinn?
I'm familiar. He did Aliens 3. No, Aliens Resurrection.
Yeah, he also did
Titan
A.E. Yes, yeah,
and didn't he do Atlantis?
Yes. He wrote a first draft of Atlantis.
Just glowing stuff. All his best stuff, really.
That was... little side note here. Joss Whedon did a Reddit AMA, and someone asked him, what's your favorite joke from your entire
Titan AE?
And he responded with Titan AE, which is the best.
Mm-hmm.
So this movie is about a lot of things. It's a movie with a message. It's sort of like an essay film, in a way.
Yeah, yeah.
In that it's very much about... So, what I got out of it is they talk a lot about the old gods, and I thought that meant the audience.
Oh, okay. So you're kind of saying, like, hey, we're just feeding you a whole bunch of crappy kids because that's what you want. It's just ritual sacrifice. You know this. You love this. You want it. You eat it up.
Sort of.
But now it's time for you to revolt.
They talk about the old gods a lot, and like the ancients and stuff, and needing to appease the ancients.
Right.
And Bradley Whitford says, like, you know, at one point he very directly says that, like, we need to get some nudity out of this girl because we don't want to disappoint the customers.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, like, that...
We're not the only ones watching.
Yeah, like... that is a really... It's really not subtle. I feel like that is the point at which it is very clear that the audience is sort of the villain in this,
mm-hmm,
movie,
mm-hmm,
and is sort of implicated in a weird fourth wall breaking way.
Right.
Where, you know, you could interpret it even as Sigourney Weaver is like the director of a movie,
mm-hmm,
and Jenkins and Whitford are like the tech for the movie,
yeah,
or something.
Yeah, they're like a cinematographer and director of photography or something.
Yeah, gas men.
Yeah, and you know, Amy Acker is like a prop designer.
Yeah.
Let's go.
Yeah, like, there are a lot of very clear things in that movie that seem to insinuate that the reason all this stuff is going down is because you paid to watch this movie.
Yes, yeah.
Which is really weird.
And I actually really enjoy that you thought of it that way, because I didn't really think of it that way, and now that I think of it that way, it does make a lot of sense.
Uh-huh.
And that just goes to Joss Whedon's quote from that Reddit thing, all worthy work is open to interpretations the author didn't intend. Art isn't your pet, it's your kid. It grows up and talks back to you.
Yeah, no. And that's a great quote.
Yes.
About, especially about this movie, because I feel like a lot of people are going to have different ideas as to what's right. I'm sure some people will not even get anything out of it.
Mm-hmm.
They'll just be like, that was kind of a weird and lame horror movie.
Mm-hmm.
And not really understand that it's not supposed to be a horror movie in the strictest sense.
Really, what I think that Joss Whedon and Drew Goddard wanted people to come away from this movie was, dude, you don't have to pay for the same exact story over and over again. Just change the plot and the hot people in the movie.
Yeah, it's almost as if they were talking to the people who paid for this movie without knowing anything about it.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, you paid for a movie you know nothing about because it was called Cabin in the Woods.
You're right.
And the trailers looked like it was just just another lame horror movie.
Yeah, because was it Mordecai?
Yeah.
Can't believe we forgot about Mordecai. The speakerphone thing. Yeah. You have me on speakerphone? Oh, no, man, you're not on... I can hear the echo.
And then he just does it a second time. No, he's like, okay, now you're not on speakerphone. Keep talking your talk.
Mm-hmm. What I love about Joss Whedon is that he can make a joke last a second time, but he rarely goes for the third.
Mm-hmm. The third is generally where it starts to fall apart. If you go to a fourth... There's a chance of it coming around to being funny again.
But there is the rule of threes in comedy. If you do things, you try and do it three times.
Mm-hmm.
But I like that Joss Whedon plays with it and he only does it twice. Or
the rule of two.
Yeah. Joss Whedon has the rule of two.
Yeah.
Or the rule of one with things like like the joke at the beginning with the baby proof in the apartment. Like, she did the cabinets too. He's not going to be able to reach those until he's like 30.
Yeah. Yeah, just little stuff like that. And yeah, it's a movie that's really satisfying on a lot of levels, some mm-hmm. of which are immediate and others that require a bit more thought.
Right. And actually, like, if you go on the internet, you find a picture, and talking mostly to the audience, of the main poster, the poster that they're, pretty much presenting for this movie, and it's got the cabin that's in kind of like a Rubik's Cube shape. That, right. In and of itself, speaks so much about what this movie is trying to do.
Yeah, and I should stress that I'm not quite as, because I had a good chunk of this movie spoiled for me.
Mm-hmm.
Just in terms of what was going on. Like, I knew going in what Richard Jenkins and Bradley Whitford were up to.
I think that might have been the best part about, my experience. Was it the only thing that I knew about the movie was the trailer, and that was it.
And that's probably a much different experience, and is probably better in some ways, and maybe even a little bit worse in some other ways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I mean, the thing that really impressed me is that movie does not have twists, really. Like, it lays all of its cards on the table at the beginning. It says, here, figure out what's going on here.
Right.
And that just sort of reveals a little bit at a time.
Well,
does so in a really good pace and in a way that's really smooth and less jarring than just, like, an M. Night Shyamalan, he was dead all along sort of twist. Like, it's linear and you can always follow it because nothing is so out of left field
I do think that, that kind of stuff, it's probably kind of a little bit of, studio pressure. Like, hey, you have this wild concept. We can't go too crazy with it.
Right.
And I think it was, who was it? It might have been Joss Whedon. I might be making this up. It could have been somebody else. But somebody who writes scripts says that he does about three different... He uses exposition over and over again, and then he starts editing it down.
Hmm.
Was that Joss Whedon?
I don't know.
I could have sworn it was from that interview that I sent you the other day.
It might be.
I don't know. But
I don't remember that too vividly.
Let's just say that it wasn't, because I don't want to be wrong here.
Sure. That sounds reasonable.
Yeah, so, but anyway, to have this wild concept, and there was a lot of exposition, but, you know, that I think that might even be, you know, an added layer of commentary of, like, hey, we can't go crazy, because then the audience wouldn't really understand it.
Right. And I think one of the slyest things in that movie is sort of, you're in a position as the audience where you're made to sort of want the teenagers to get out of this situation.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can see what's happening behind the scenes, and it's all very shady, and you don't quite know what's going on, but, you know, these people are up to no good.
Mm-hmm.
And then they totally just turn that on its head at the end of the movie.
Right.
Where you want everybody who is involved with making other people die to die.
Mm-hmm.
Which, so you're sort of doing the same thing that they're doing to the... It's all very convoluted, but I'm sort of trying to communicate that the audience in that scene where all the monsters are let loose, and how satisfying and funny that scene is, they've sort of... The audience has become like Jenkins and Whitford.
Yes.
In that sense, where early in the movie, they're the ones doing this to the teenagers, and now we're the ones doing this to the people who are doing this to the teenagers.
Yes.
And, like, the fact that I just said that means that this movie is kind of amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's not something that's easy to communicate in a movie, that level of complexity and commentary.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they really nail it. Exquisitely in this movie.
Yeah. I think on all fronts, this movie just excels on every... It delivers on every single thing that it sets out to do.
Yeah, I would agree. I think the writing, obviously, top-notch.
Mm-hmm.
The actors, I think, are really... I mean, some of the... Like, Jules is not much of a character...
But what she does with it is so perfect.
Yeah, it's very interesting. But, like,
and
Dana
kinda,
and
she kind of reminds
Marty.
Me of, like, a more slutty Anya from Buffy.
Kinda. No, I could see that. But I think Marty and Dana are really the, as far as acting goes, the stars of the show.
Very much so.
I think the scenes at the end with them alone together are probably some of my favorite.
Mm-hmm. Most definitely. Anything with Dana in it, I was totally fine with.
Well, of course. You're just a pig.
No, she's adorable.
No,
and that scene, whatever, like the two-way mirror thing, it's like,
yeah.
Hold on. No, can't do it.
And walks out, and then walks back into frame.
Yeah.
It's like,
And then they switch rooms, and she almost does the same thing, only she almost does the more negative side of it.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
It's
fantastic.
Yeah.
There are layers upon layers of this movie. I cannot wait to see it again.
Mm-hmm.
I'm definitely going to be buying it on Blu-ray day one. And I hope there's, you know, maybe some kind of director's cut or something. I don't know what you would add to it, but maybe
but
something.
Just add more. Give me, you know what I would pay good money for?
More Dana.
More, okay. Okay. More Dana. Sure.
Yes.
I think we can all agree upon that.
Uh-huh.
But I was going to say, like, even like a series of shorts... That just sort of shows how the other scenarios play out with the different monsters and the different items in the cellar.
Okay, yeah.
Like, just something, because I gotta say, I really want to know what was going to happen with that film reel that Marty was looking at.
Yes.
Like, that piqued my interest.
I think that... Even if, like, it was, you know, just a behind-the-scenes kind of thing, you know, like, in Dr. Horrible, they have that thing, like, everyone had their own character, and they talked about their character for the mm-hmm. Evil League of Evil. Like, what if they were just like, all right, so this is what we were thinking of whenever we were putting things in here.
Right.
It'd be pretty great.
Yeah. And I can't wait to hear the Goddard Whedon commentary for that, because that's going to be amazing. And also, can I say how much my spirits were lifted? Like, I got this really warm, fuzzy feeling when during the opening credits it said a Mutant Enemy production. Was I alone in that?
You were not alone.
Because I was like, ah, yes.
Yep. There was more Whedon in there than we previously thought.
Yeah, no. Whedon is just all over that thing. Yeah. Especially, like, the ending is just a trademark Whedon deal. It's just like, nope, everything's fucked.
Yep.
Because
that is the exact same way that Buffy and Angel and Dollhouse and Firefly.
Everything's fucked all the time.
Everything's always fucked. It's great.
It is an excellent movie, and I recommend it to anyone. I would recommend everybody also read our glowing 5-star review. Caution sign review.
You would give it a 5 as well?
Yes.
I would give it a 5.
I don't think there's anything in that movie I'd change.
No.
And that's sort of the litmus test for me of a movie I am confident giving 5 is like, is there something here I'd make different? Nope. Okay then. 5.
Yeah.
So, well,
that
Clint,
about does it, I guess.
How do you feel about this inaugural episode, the first annual?
I feel pretty good.
Pretty good?
I feel pretty good. I feel pretty good. Yeah.
I look forward to talking about some more controversial issues. This one wasn't so controversial.
As much as it is just a hot-button thing, like, everyone is going to be talking about this movie, I know it, because all of a sudden Twitter is just lighting up, hey, everyone should go see Cabin in the Woods. Go see Cabin in the Woods. Fucking go see Cabin in the Woods. Maybe I should go see that movie, Cabin in the Woods.
Yeah, it's going to be an incredible word-of-mouth movie, I think.
I really hope that it reaches the top of the box office this weekend.
Numbers show that it's in third.
Fuck numbers.
I'm just saying it is in a close third behind The Hunger Games and The Three Stooges.
Yeah.
But it's weird because I wrote that editorial, yesterday in the dead of night. It's actually trafficked pretty well. A lot of clicks on that one. About sort of the current cultural perception of fanboys and how I find it sound sort of outdated and mean and all this stuff. And that spoke very specifically about 2 Cabin in the Woods reviews, one of which is by Rex Reed. It's kind of an asshole. I'm not going to hold back. All I'm going to say is that he gets a ton of shit wrong in that review. Not like subjective things either. Like in just describing the plot of the movie. He seems to think that the service they're doing is an elaborate video game for paying customers who want to see the people killed in a certain way. Yeah. It's dumb. He also at the end says that there were a bunch of so-called fanboys laughing, even though I didn't find anything even remotely amusing. I bet these people don't even know who Sigourney Weaver is.
Yeah.
I was like, what the have you seen Alien?
Yeah, seriously.
Like, the defining nerd movie of the past 25 years?
I mean, these are the same people who are going to movies now that are on Twitter saying, I didn't know that the Titanic was a real event. So, maybe, you know what, maybe it's, yes, Joss Whedon, Drew Goddard, yes, you are totally right to make this movie. So.
Yes, and according to Rex Reed, it was fueled by crystal meth.
Yep, and so
I hope you enjoyed your crystal meth, guys.
Yes.
It was put to good use.
Any last remarks?
Last remarks.
Well, remarks is a horrible word to use. Any last comments?
Marty's really funny.
Marty is really funny. Dana's really adorable.
We cannot stress that enough.
No.
I believe I can't remember what her actual name is.
Kristen Connolly.
That's it, Christian Connolly. Any relation to Jennifer?
I don't think so.
Well, okay then. But, yeah, she's adorable. Marty is awesome and hilarious. Yes. And
Joss Whedon is...
worth it for the merman.
The merman alone.
Worth it for the merman.
Worth the price of admission.
Also, someone make a gif of the part where Richard Jenkins and Bradley Whitford are, like, dancing for 3 seconds.
Yeah, I was cracking up at that.
Because it's so not... because they turn on the music in the cabin, and they can hear it in the... and you see the cabin's point of view for, like, 3 seconds, and then they just suddenly cut back to the control room where they're, like, kind of shuffling awkwardly to the music, and then they cut back.
Yep.
It's just perfect.
All right.
Thank you for listening.
That'll do it.
Pushing the hot button.
Push.
First episode.
I don't... yeah, I'm gonna fade us out.
Fade us out?
Yeah, with some musica.
With some musica?
From the Cabin in the Woods original motion picture soundtrack.
Okay, well, thanks for listening, and be sure to listen to Error Report. Follow me on Twitter at notfoundblog, underscores in between each word. Clint Prentice is at @originalclint.
We'll see you the
and
next
don't have
time
to follow any of the other people who write for our site, because they're jerks.
And we'll see you guys the next time that something comes up that we really want to talk about more in depth.
See ya.